got it half.
Okay. Good evening, and welcome to the Commission RDA and Presentations and Awards meeting of Wednesday, April 24th, 2019. So what we're going to begin with, I think, is going to be the Pledge of Allegiance. Let's all stand up, and I'd like Joshua Caraway to come lead us in the pledge. Just come right here, wave the flag. You'll learn who he is a little bit later. And lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance, please, Josh.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thanks, Joshua. All right, so what we're going to do today, folks, and thank you all for coming, is we're going to take some presentations and awards, and then we're going to take care of a little bit of business, and then we're going to convene as the RDA briefly, and then I think we're also going to take, that's when we're going to approve a settlement. So let's begin with PA 5 and 6. Or do you have any announcements first?
Actually, they're all incorporated in your notation, so we'll just transfer those to the after.
Perfect. Let's begin with 5 and 6.
PA 5 is a proclamation and certificate, sanitation and parks recreation, requested by Commissioner by Mayor Gelber, Commissioner Samuelin, Ariola, and Alamon. And PA 6 is certificate of appreciation, Willie Hodges, requested by Commissioners Alamon, Ariola, and Mayor Gelber.
Okay, Commissioner Samuelin, this is a, I think everybody is doing these proclamations to our parks and recreation and sanitation. So why don't you begin, though, with the certificate.
Sounds great. Thank you, Mayor. Spring break was a challenging time for our city, but during challenge, you see opportunity and you see people step up. And we really, really appreciate the efforts of our city administration that did a wonderful job of keeping our beach clean and turning things over in a way that was very admirable. It took a gargantuan team effort. And so what I want to do is just highlight a proclamation that we have. I'm going to highlight a few folks that led the effort. And then we have certificates for everyone that was involved because, you know, it takes a village and everyone really contributed in keeping our beach, one of our most valuable assets, pristine. So in terms of the proclamation, what I would just share is that it was a high-impact weekend, and you could say that again, but our sanitation and recreation staff did an admirable job. Both departments consistently went above and beyond during spring break and did an exemplary job. So that's to the Cole team. Everyone really, really delivered. I do also want to recognize a few folks, again, both from sanitation and parks. Let me just shout out some names, and then maybe what we'll do is we'll get everyone to come up front. We'll get a group photo. I think we will all fit. But in sanitation, Rhonda McPherson, Superintendent George Ruiz, Juan Rosario, Alfonso Ritchie, Alvaro Redo, Benji Benaim, Kaylee Leon, Michael Clark, and William Hodges did a fabulous job, and they were supported by a great, great team of staff with them. From the park side, Jose Del Risco, Javier Figuera, Albert Knight, and Derek Jensen also were part of that leadership, and they had quite a group. So I'd love to give everyone a round of applause, and then if we could bring them up.
Commissioner Alamon. You have a subset of this in PA 6.
I do. Both Commissioner Ariola and myself wanted to call out, Commissioner Samuelin said it beautifully, when we have challenges, really gives the right people the opportunity to shine. And one shining example of that is Sanitation Operations Supervisor Willie Hodges. Now, I wish I'd known Willie Hodges before, but he came to me on Facebook, a resident, had become very concerned. They saw that there was a lot of litter on the beach, and it was being washed out. The tide had come in, and it was washing all of that refuse out into the ocean. And they alerted Willie, and he didn't wait, even though he knew that later that night sanitation was due to clean that up. He jumped right into action, recognizing how much garbage would have been swept out in the meantime. And he provided trash bags and called for backup and jumped right on it to handle it at the right time. And that sense of ownership over our environment, over our beach, that sense of personal responsibility, and his knowledge that he as an individual could make a difference, I'm sure shows up every day in his work, in his life. I know his wife is here. I had the honor to meet her. You've got a great husband, and we sure do appreciate that he works here at the City of Miami Beach.
So a little bit later, we'll be recognizing a visitor who helped, but I just want to say on behalf of all of our residents, we really are grateful to all of you. You know, we have high expectations. Our residents have really high expectations, and sometimes when it gets even, when those expectations are hard to meet for just about anybody, our employees really do an amazing job, and we need to say thank you and let you know we're grateful. So with that, let's get everybody to come up for a picture, and then we'll move on to our next.
All the folks I mentioned, as well as the staff that worked on it, please all come up.
This way a little bit.
Slide down a little, guys.
You want me to bite your toe? You want me to bite your toe? This is item PA1, recognition Debbie Turney's retirement, requested by Mayor Gelbert, Commissioner Gongora, Steinberg, and Malakoff.
Where is Debbie Turney?
You gave it to him.
Debbie Turney.
Yes. Thank you. Yeah. Go ahead.
Mr. Mayor, thank you. Everyone, it's kind of with a heavy heart that I give this proclamation, and I thank all of you that sponsored it, and when I think of the best in public service, of what a public official is supposed to represent, I can think of no better representative of that than our first assistant city attorney, Deborah Turner, who is retiring at the end of this month. I have known Debbie since the day I stepped into the city attorney's office 20 years ago, and she started her career at the city in 1989. So not only does Debbie have this incredible historical knowledge of the city, but she's virtually worked on almost every single issue and scope of practice that you can imagine, from litigation to land use to any kind of legal opinion. I know that most of you, when you come to me with a particular project or, for example, an ordinance or a resolution that you want to sponsor and get passed, I know that when you ask me who can I work with on this, most of you answer back, can I work with Debbie on this? And part of the reason is Debbie has a precision and an attention to detail, and whether it's doing a resolution on anything from an environmental issue to an international issue to a local issue, or writing a city ordinance on anything ranging from a lot of our green legislation, which, by the way, she's responsible for drafting, and other laws that she's responsible for in the city code. Whenever a city board, agency, or committee usually needs a very detailed and intense sunshine law and public records briefing, this is the go-to in our office. As a person, she's also our touchstone. She's kind of the heart and soul of our office. She's been the one that we've gone to for so many years. She's the quiet water that is always constant and that never loses her temper, never gets stressed out. She's the one that makes sure that we comply with our agenda deadlines every month and that we keep you guys happy by putting your stuff on the agenda in a timely manner. I could sit here for another half hour telling you all the things that she represents for us and that she's done for us, but there aren't enough hours to talk about that. I only want to honor her, and I thank you, Mr. Mayor, for honoring her with this very special proclamation, and I'll just read the last part of it because, again, it doesn't get better than Debbie Turner. And as an attorney, or as anybody in the city attorney's office, including our staff, it's our privilege to have worked with her for the years that we've worked with her because she's not only made our office better, but at least for me, and I know I speak for everybody in the office who's here today as well to honor her, she's made our lives better. Ms. Turner has demonstrated a deep love of public service, the law, and this city, and she represents the best of the best of the legal profession and of our city by promoting and adhering to the highest standards of ethics, honor, and civility. So I'm not very good at doing these things, but I want to honor Debbie by giving her this proclamation from you all today and declaring today, April 24th, 2019, Deborah J. Turner Day.
Joy. Apparently that wasn't enough. We're going to go over to Commissioner Malakoff and anyone else.
Me too. I didn't want to let this opportunity pass by without saying a few words about Deborah Turner. I was involved in the city of Miami Beach as a member and then as chairman of the planning board back in the 1990s when we tackled the old ordinance, the old regulations and so forth. Deborah was wonderful, and as the city attorney said, she epitomizes public service. I never asked Deborah anything that she didn't have an answer for, and if she didn't know right away, she looked it up. And I just want to thank you so much for all the hours and hours that you've worked on projects that I've been involved in since the 1990s. Thank you so much, Deborah.
Anyone else?
Yeah.
All right, Commissioner Sanders.
Oh, I wanted to say something at Neighborhoods. We didn't have a chance. What many people may not realize, she also was the city attorney who sat at that commission committee, at the Neighborhoods Committee. So I've had the privilege of sitting by your side for 6 years at that committee, and always the most respectful. You do your due diligence, but we like you. You're not just a great attorney, you're a great person, and you're amazing, and I'm going to miss you on a personal level, and I hope you come back and visit, and I'm sure we'll all be calling you from time to time, because you do write the most exquisite resolutions, and you're in our heart forever. So thank you for everything you've done for the city.
Debbie Turner is so quiet and professional and sweet, but absolutely precise and very efficient, you know, turning things around so quickly and thoroughly. It's really quite amazing. And I wanted to thank you specifically for two areas of legislation that you helped me with that I'm very, very proud of, which is the conversion therapy ban and the ordinances and resolutions around our resilient infrastructure, which is literally the future of the city of Miami Beach. Thank you so much. It's been an honor.
Sure. Debbie, after all these years of being on and off the commission and working with you for so long, I consider you more than just a work colleague. I do consider you a friend. But Raul was right when he says you represent the best of the best in municipal attorneys and attorneys all around. You are professional. You are responsive. You are direct. But when you do something, we know it's going to be done right. And that's why I bypass Raul. I just send you all my resolutions because I know you're going to do a great job.
Right.
So even though today is goodbye and I know you have a lot of travel plans for the immediate near future, I know this is just a temporary goodbye and that you'll be back working with us in some capacity soon. So we miss you.
Thank you.
I guess since we're all going, I'll just say it has been a pleasure working with you, Debbie, and you'll be missed. But as I look at you, I see how relieved and happy you already look that you no longer have to work with Raul. But some of us have to continue, so we envy you. And Raul, Jimmy, did she get combat pay for all these years of working with Raul?
She needs a better union than that for her.
But she should. She should.
Yeah, so congratulations. Enjoy.
So listen, everybody gets a proclamation. I get to do something a little bit more. We give a lot of swag in the city, Debbie, but this one is reserved for dignitaries, the rap singer Drake, and you. This is our glass key, and we really just want you to know if you had to do an LTC about what we just did to us, okay, you'd probably just say we were grateful. And you wouldn't have to write anything else. We really are. It's the easiest thing to say is thank you very much. We're proud of the work you've done, and we're grateful on behalf of our residents for getting it right so often. So thank you. So let's all go down and take a picture. Come on. Okay. PA 10.
Jimmy, I think we're over here again.
All right.
We're coming back.
They're not here.
Here
they are. They're in the
back. Okay. No most capacity here.
Andrew, are you ready?
The next item is PA 10, Certificates of Recognition, Jenna Groden, Jolie Drellin, and Asher Lieberman, requested by Commissioner Steinberg and Mayor Gelber.
All right, PA 10, come on.
Just so that everybody is aware, these three remarkable students are being recognized today for their efforts in advocating for a policy change through the Florida legislature as it relates to the opioid crisis in the state of Florida. And, Mayor, I don't know if you want to add anything, but, you know, they're doing it. They're taking a role. They see it. They're identifying an issue, and they're working really hard, and they're doing it the right way. And they're going to their elected representatives, and they're trying to get legislation passed. And it's amazing to see the future generation working so hard, and, you know, it makes us feel good that our future is in your hands.
So, first of all, we thank all of you, and briefly tell us a little bit about the legislation, because I think that would make it would help us all to know what it is. Although I do know what it is, you're promoting Narcan in the public schools to deal with people who are afflicted with opioids. Anything you want to tell us of what you've learned about the Florida legislature, and be very careful what you say. Sure.
So this basically showed us that you can really take a problem that you see and do something about it. Like, we're not powerless as kids. We actually can make changes in our state.
Asher?
No, that was pretty well said. I mean, it shows us that, like, if you really are passionate about something, that you can have a voice, and that people are willing to listen to you, even though you are still kids. People are still willing to listen to you.
What was it about this issue that motivated you?
Well, over the summer, last summer, I worked at a needle exchange program, and I saw, like, just how big the opioid epidemic was, and that's how I got introduced to Narcan, which is a drug that revives you if you overdose on opioids, and I saw just how big of a difference that made in the people who are affected by the epidemic's lives. And then I did some research, and I found out that Florida doesn't have a policy to have Narcan in schools, whereas other states do. And I feel like since the opioid epidemic is getting really bad, it might find its way onto school campus. So I got some team together who was also passionate about it, and, yeah, trying to work against that.
Yeah. Anything you want to add?
Yeah, I think it also helped that the overwhelming support we got initially, we originally started out with a simple presentation that we put a lot of effort into it and had a plan to get this in Miami-Dade schools. And originally when we presented it to the Miami-Dade Schools Health Committee, we were expecting to get, okay, that's a great idea, but not really anything about it. And as soon as we did, a bunch of people came up to us talking, we think it's amazing, you should take it to the state level, you should go to the Florida legislature. And just acting on that right away and seeing the overwhelming response and the immediate response we got just only encouraged us to push it further.
And they accomplished something that many people don't. They got a bill filed in the Senate, which is unbelievable. Didn't go anywhere, but that's okay. You actually got a bill filed, and not many people can say that. So congratulations
and
for your activism.
By the way, this is a huge epidemic in our country and in our state, obviously, as well, especially in our state. And throwing into the marketplace the idea that this is important for everybody to address is, even if you don't get a law passed from it, putting that out there will often have a ripple effect that will ultimately save lives, because so many people are afflicted by this and so many people are dealing with it, so many families are. So we're very grateful to you all. I have to confess, I've known Asher since he was born. He's now at least 6'4", so I'm a little worried that he's growing too fast. But we're really grateful to all of you, and you should be very, very proud of yourselves. So,
thank you for keeping the conversation going.
Eight is a proclamation, Bella Perdomo winning Local 10 News Eco Hero Contest, requested by Commissioner Gongora.
Thank you. I am so excited about this award. Later on in the meeting today, we'll also have the opportunity to proclaim it Earth Month in our city. But before that, we're going to recognize a young environmental ambassador who cares about our environment and planet so deeply at the age of 16 years old. We have with us Isabella Perdomo, a resident of Miami Beach, North Beach, to be specific. She's a 10th grade student at MAST at FIU High School in North Miami. Isabella has been a strong advocate for our waterways, and she's involved in a variety of community services, problem solving, and technology-infused activities that provide solutions on environmental issues. Take note, sustainability members. In the past, she's worked on an environmentally friendly project that included a 3-year study to develop a cost-effective and alternative solution to the use of toxic chemicals in boat bottom paints that are used for the purpose of barnacle growth reduction. Her research earned her a national first place title winner for CS Girls, an organization celebrating girls who code in science, and the Latsism Award, celebrating contributions to national science fairs from our Latino population. This year, Isabella Arbella created a novel, environmentally friendly invention that outperforms state-of-the-art devices already on the market, which she has since patented the invention. And for this and many other reasons, she was chosen as Miami Zoo and Local 10's 2018 Eco Hero winner. I was so proud when I was watching Local 10 and I saw this story and learned more about this incredible young lady, and further that she's a resident of our very own city. She's also a member of the South Florida Youth Symphony, which recently performed at the 2018 presidential inauguration. We won't hold that against you. No, I'm kidding. She's also performed at Carnegie Hall, and she represents her peers as a spokesperson at monthly school board meetings. She's one of 6 students who will represent her school district at the ISEF for the 2nd year in a row, and was recently awarded the Office of Naval Research Naval Science Award for the 4th consecutive year while participating in the state fair, where she's also won numerous awards over the years. She's the only person in the state of Florida to be awarded a special award from FAU to attend a 1-week research camp in an effort to further her understanding of the issues affecting our water system here in Florida. In her free time, as if she had any free time, Isabella plays 3 musical instruments and enjoys competing in science competitions. She plans on pursuing a career in biomedical engineering. Also, Isabella was recently in the news under less happy terms, as she was the victim in a recent vicious assault last September that was well documented in the media that left her with multiple skull and hand fractures, vision and hearing difficulties, and cognitive function deficiencies that have not slowed her down in any which way or form as she moves forward. She's accompanied by her very proud parents, her mother, Elizabeth, who I had a chance to talk to, her father, Orlando. Isabella, on behalf of the City of Miami Beach, we thank you for being an amazing ambassador for the environment, an excellent Latina role model for everyone at the age of 16. So I am proud to proclaim with our commission that today shall also forever be known as Isabella Perdomo Day in the City of Miami Beach. Ella, please come forward to the mic. Anything you want to say?
Yeah, actually, you listed all of those accomplishments, and none of that would have been possible without all the support that I've received over the many years that I've been doing this, starting with, of course, my parents since birth, but as well as you for watching that documentary and recognizing me, as well as Local Channel 10 for hosting the competition, Zoo Miami and Ron McGill, and all of the teachers that have supported me throughout my education, and and every other person in the community that has supported for me for the Eco Hero competition, voted for me so that I could earn that trip. Yeah.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
We're incredibly proud of what lies ahead. We're going to be incredibly proud to be watching you in the future and the many great things I know are coming.
Oh, my God. I just...
Congratulations.
I just know...
Okay, we're going to call up. I'm going to do, hold on, I know which one I want to do. PA3.
PA3 is proclamation, Joshua Caraway, beach cleanup, requested by Mayor Gelbert.
Okay, let me tell you, we are not honoring a resident. I'm welcoming Joshua Caraway back, the commissioner, to our city, along with his mother, Sandra Caraway. If you don't know who Josh is, Josh is a 19-year-old Atlanta, Georgia native, majoring in biology with a minor in business at the University of West Georgia. He chose these majors because he's always cared very deeply about animals and the environment and hopes one day to open up his own business to help animals and keep the earth clean. On March 23rd, while on spring break, Joshua decided that he just wanted to clean up the mess. So he started to simply clean our beaches. Didn't do it because we are going to recognize him. Didn't do it for any other reason than he has a heart that stirred him to do that. Even when his friends didn't want to help, sorry to drop a dime on your friends, he continued to do it because that's what people like Joshua do. Photos of him cleaning the beach up during the difficult time on spring break went viral with 220,000 views. He picked up multiple bags, not just a bag, on his own in the hot sun, simply because he felt it was the right thing to do. And the reason why we brought him back down was we wanted to make a point that we want visitors to come here. We want them to enjoy themselves. We want them to treat our place as special as we feel it is. And like you tell your kids, don't do at another person, you know, at home what you wouldn't do elsewhere. And he really followed that. He kept his place clean and kept our place clean and did it really in a beautiful way. He's here with his mom, Sandra Caraway. And I tell you, Sandra, we talked before this, that obviously a kid doesn't fall far from a tree. And we really appreciate you raised a wonderful child and we're all very grateful. He's being hosted by the Shelburne Hotel. So I want to thank Anna Maria, the Shelburne Hotel Manager, and Wendy Kalirgis from the Greater Miami Beaches and Hotel Association for generously bringing him in. And thank you again for all you did. And Joshua, why don't you come up and say a few words if you'd like. We are, you know, this was just, we wanted to make a point that you can come here and have a great time and leave the place clean. And I know you wanted to do that, and we are grateful for you for setting that example. So come on up.
I am so grateful right now. I would like to thank God first, the mayor, the mayor's assistant, the commission, Miami Beach, my parents, Joe, the police force. And my small contribution is one of many across the world. This generation is in an environmental crisis, and I want everybody to know that change starts with us. Thank you.
Congratulations again.
Congratulations.
That kid's a good kid. Is Tyrese here? Not yet. Okay, let's move to... What? Oh, all right. Let's go to PA2.
I'm sorry for being late.
All right, come on over there.
So PA2.
PA2.
PA2, Certificates of Recognition, Miami Beach Police Department Detective Mitchell and Tyrese Cullen.
All right. So I think everybody knows, this is mine, right?
Yes, sir.
So I think everybody, we've seen you before. Detective, come up and tell us a little bit about the story. I've been involved in the Big Brothers program since I was 25 years old. I've had the same little brother since he was 6 years old. He's now in his mid-30s. I was on the phone with him last night. He's a dentist in Boston, about to have his third child, and there's no greater joy than you can get than watching somebody you're working with become something you're proud of. And so why don't you tell us a little about your story, Detective?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, and to the entire commission. And it's an honor to stand before you all and talk about Tyrese and I's story. We shared 1 year together. About 2 years ago, I joined Big Brothers Big Sisters. A little bit of peer pressure from the wife and one of our captains in the department, I decided to take on the challenge, not knowing who they were going to basically team me up with. I was teamed up with Tyrese, and not knowing Tyrese's background as well. Tyrese had a dislike for law enforcement. Unfortunately, his cousin, who was like a father to him, was killed by a police officer in New York, and Tyrese took a turn where he did not like police officers at all. Tyrese was also struggling a little bit in the academic area at Beach High, even though he was playing great football during the time as a junior. And that was my challenge. 1 year of working with Tyrese. Tyrese is a fan of police officers. He loves cops. Not only does he love cops, he's on honor roll. He's graduating this year, and he has a full scholarship to Venture College in California.
Wow. All right. Not too bad. Not too bad. That's terrific. I can just tell you that, we're very proud of our employees, but we're very proud when they go above and beyond and they decide they're going to take responsibility for something other than just the job they have. So we're very grateful to you. Tracy, would like to rebut anything he said?
Good afternoon, everyone. When I first went came to the Big Brothers Big Sisters program, it was kind of like nerve-wracking because I was like, oh, Jesus, Lord, I got a cop as my big brother now. And then me, as soon as Chris walked in the door, I was like, me and Chris make this weird bond. Like, it was like a weird eye contact. And I looked at Chris. I was like, Chris looked at me, and we just smiled for like a good 5 minutes. And then that's when I was like, watch you be my big brother. And then that's when it was like the first couple of, because we used to see each other twice a month, and like the first couple of Vince's was like kind of rocky. I was like, oh, should I trust him? Should I not? Should I, yeah? And that's when he told me about the passing of his son, Dwayne. And then I told him about the passing of my cousin. And then that's when he was telling me about how important it is to finish high school so you could go to college, because I didn't want to finish high school because Miami Beach was like a hard school. So like it was like kind of hard to get my grades up. And then I had an issue with my mother, my beautiful mother right there. So then that's when he was like, he had me write a letter to her. And then that's when I wrote a letter telling her how much I appreciate her and all that stuff. And then that's when me and Chris, little by little, we just started getting together. And then for spring break, we went to Arizona to see the NFL people. And I was like, it was like so stoked. I was like, wow, I seen Jerry Jones, a whole bunch of NFL coaches. And that's how we like, from there on. And then Adrian, I don't know if he's here, he called me like 2 days before I came back from Arizona saying that, oh, you got to see the mayor of Miami Beach. I was like, what? And then that's when And then that's when I was like, oh, shoot. And then that's when he was like, oh, save the date. And I was like, okay, I'm coming. And then today's the day, and I came late. I'm sorry.
Well, we're very grateful, and it's heartwarming to hear, and we're really proud of what you've done, Detective, and we're proud of you. You got a great life in front of you, and a writing letter thanking your mom is a good way. Should do it every day, right, Mom? Okay. You don't want to do that. That's okay. But we're really happy. This is a nice moment. So let's go take a picture and appreciate it.
PA7 is Certificates of Appreciation, Individuals of Mid-Beach Community Garden, requested by Commissioner Alamon and Mayor Gelber.
All right, Alamon.
Perfect. All right. I'm going to introduce this one, and as I introduce each person by name, I'll ask you to come up, join the mayor, and stay beside the mayor, okay? The mayor and I were out in Pine Tree Park for an event, and we had an opportunity to meet the members that take care of the Pine Tree Park Community Garden and see their garden. And we were both really duly impressed and wanted to say a formal thank you to the four people that provide just daily care and nurturing to this wonderful community asset in Pine Tree Park. And starting with Toby Ash. Toby, please come on up.
Toby,
yes. Toby started the organic garden 10 years ago, which was in the site of the former police canine training area. The community garden is built in the original wooded plank plots, and by 2014, the plots were falling apart, and the gardeners, some of them with disabilities, couldn't use them very well. And Toby secured a grant from Keep South Florida Beautiful and the City of Miami Beach and installed the more robust planked plots that we have today. There's 72 plots that get assigned and reassigned every summer. She's inundated with requests because it's such a great thing to be a part of. Residents pay $10 a year, and they're able to plant their organic crops that are suitable to Miami's growing season, tomatoes and green peppers, herbs, and so forth. Most grow for their own use, but some also share their harvest. And if you're interested in a plot, you can email pinetreeparkcommunitygarden@gmail.com. So first of all, thank you to Toby for being the tremendous leader of the Pine Tree Park Community Garden. She's joined by Jose Duran. Come on up, Jose. Jose was even featured in the Miami Herald for his incredible work in the garden. Aldo Mejas, who's Jose's right-hand man. And Maria Pelas, we know her as Fonsi. She is the butterfly queen. Fonsi builds and maintains multiple butterfly hatcheries in the garden, including monarchs, swallowtails, and zebra longwings. And because of her TLC, they are averaging about 10 butterflies daily that come from their cocoons and fly. And those are our newest residents, Mayor, is the butterflies that Fonsi nurtures. So thank you all so much for your work in the community garden. I'm coming down.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Milkweed plant. Lots. A dozen at a time.
Okay, PA-4. Let's call that up.
PA-4 is Proclamation Child Abuse Prevention Month, requested by Mayor Gelber.
Okay. Beatrice Lopez from DCF is here. Come on up. Who else? Anyone else on this? Okay. This is me, right?
Sure is.
All right. So this proclamation is Child Abuse Prevention Month. Beatrice, we're going to ask you to say a few words. I'm just going to say on behalf of our city that, you know, we obviously believe, and this proclamation says this, that every child deserves to grow up in a nurturing, safe, and healthy environment, but unfortunately many do not. And this month we try to alert people to that. We try to raise awareness and let all those groups that have an ability to see it, whether it's a school or a business or a city government or just a neighbor or a resident, to make them aware that it can be happening next door or in a classroom. The blue and silver pinwheel is a symbol of the health and happiness all children deserve. And in April, Prevent Child Abuse Florida, in collaboration with the governor's office and the Florida Department of Children and Families and the Ounce of Prevention Fund, will implement Pinwheels for Prevention, a statewide campaign promoting healthy child development and positive parenting practices. And therefore, we as a mayor and commission do hereby proclaim the month of April as Child Abuse Prevention Month. Thank you very much for the work you do, Beatrice. And why don't you say a few words?
Thank you very much, Mayor. We're very happy to be here. Of course, we work with Miami Beach a lot. Child abuse does touch every community. A lot of people don't know that. One in four children have actually experienced child abuse in their lives, whether it's mental abuse, emotional abuse, physical or sexual. And today we're just, you know, here to talk about how we can make sure that that doesn't happen in our communities or that our children, our neighbors, are not in uncomfortable positions. Thank you so much.
Sure.
Thank you.
Our next item is PA-11, Proclamation Earth Month in the City of Miami Beach, requested by Commissioner Gongora.
Thank you. Last but not least, I'm very excited. Earth Day that passed on Monday is an important reminder about our responsibility in conserving our environment for future generations. And some of the awards that we've given tonight have shown that the future generations are already one step ahead of where we were. Earth Day is a global event that demonstrates support for ongoing protection efforts for our environment and emphasizes the importance of caring for our planet. In 2007, hold on, I'm going to take a break until everybody leaves. All right, now that we can give Earth Day the attention that it deserves. Back in 2007, you know, I have to say at the urging of my appointee to the Sustainability Committee, who's here, Luis Rodriguez, we established as a city the Ad Hoc Green Committee that is now our resident Sustainability Committee. And that committee has accomplished several milestones in the last 12 years. The work that they do is brought to the commission. We don't generate every idea that we move forward. We move forward on ideas all the time that come from the committees. And some of the ones that have worked their ways through the Sustainability Committee have been the ordinances banning styrofoam ice coolers, which they talked about at length on city properties and eventually moving on from there. Supporting LED retrofits for our city garages, commercial recycling ordinances, prohibition on the use and distribution of single-use carry-out plastic bags, which this commission has adopted, worked its way through there, as well as the extension of the bans on plastic straws and stirrers. This committee worked on the Plastic Free Miami Beach, the voluntary program, which our administration has so ably moved forward, where businesses are now voluntarily agreeing not to use plastics. And this certification program was launched in November of this past year. So it's the work of many people. It takes an army to get things done. But fortunately, we have a green army in Miami Beach that works these issues forward. And like Joshua, who I spoke with you and your mom, and we're very proud that you, visiting here, would use your vacation time to pick up so much garbage off of our beaches. Some of the things that the work that's been done through the Environmental Coalition of Miami and the Beaches over 15 years and Louise picked up approximately 15,000 bags of trash with an average weight of 15 pounds each, meaning if you add it up through Ecom and Louise's efforts, and I have to say I used to chair the group with Louise, we picked up over 225,000 pounds of trash from our beaches. Dave Dobler, on his volunteer time, is out there on the waters in his little boat, seeing where there's garbage and there's items that are impacting the grates and clogging our system. These people don't just talk the talk. Like all of Miami Beach, we walk the walk when it comes to the environment and it comes to green issues and it comes to sustainability. That's why it's so important that we're not just going to proclaim one day as Earth Day. We're proclaiming the entire month as Miami Beach Earth Month, and I'm calling upon the chair of the Sustainability Committee, Dave Dobler, Luis, and anybody from our environmental staff, Betsy Wheaton, and the whole team, if all of you would come forward and if one of you would like to say a few words. Congratulations.
Hi, everybody. I'm Dave Dobler. I'm chair of the Sustainability Committee. Familiar face in front of this dais. You know, as I was listening to Joshua and the other recipients from tonight, they thanked their mother. Their mother gives them life, and I haven't met you two yet, but I can feel the positive energy from these folks, and I just think that it's really important for all of us to write a letter to our mother. Our Mother Earth, because without Mother Earth, we don't survive. We cease to exist. And so I also implore everybody to recognize what impact they have and what they can do to make the world a little bit better place. I always say pick a cause, any cause, and do something about it. And it's very heartwarming to come to these presentations because I get to see people who care and people who try. And thank you, Commission, for leading on so many of the issues. The Plastic Free Miami Beach campaign, Mayor Gelber, I'm thrilled with. You know, our first real engagement was on a cleanup along MacArthur Causeway, where we picked up 1,100 pounds of trash.
I remember.
And I have a feeling that your daughter, who is also participating, was pushing you from behind to move forward on the straw legislation and the Plastic Free Miami Beach. Yeah. So I want to thank everybody for doing what they need to be doing. And I hope we can hit the accelerator on some of this because we don't really have a lot of time to make sure that we can avert some of the biggest crises that we face. So thank you.
Thanks, David. Thank you for what you do.
Thank you, David.
All right. Will you join me for a photograph?
Sure.
Thank you, David, for all you do, leading the way.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you all for the awards. We're going to move on to the agenda. And let's get right to the item. Get the right number. It's R5A, right?
Yes, sir.
All right.
R5A is an ordinance of the Mayor and City Commission of the City of Miami Beach, Florida, amending Chapter 102 of the Code of the City of Miami Beach entitled Taxation by amending Article 5 entitled Local Business Tax by amending Section 102-356 thereof entitled Construction of Article Definitions to amend the definition of promoter, amending Section 102-360 thereof entitled Business Tax Receipt, Duration and Expiration Date, to establish a prohibition on the issuance of business tax receipts to promoters during the high impact periods, and further establishing the suspension during high impact periods of those annual business tax receipts issued to promoters, amending Section 102-377 thereof, entitled Penalties, Enforcement, Collection of Delinquent Fees and Taxes, and Criminal Penalties by setting forth additional penalties for alcoholic beverage establishments that have a promoted event during a high impact period, and providing for repealer, severability, codification, and effective date. This is a first reading.
Okay, members, this is a first reading. Last time was also first reading when we addressed this. Since then, we have been working on narrowing this legislation, trying to not just limit it geographically, but to make sure that it doesn't have unintended consequences, which are some of the issues that were raised at the first time. We did so much work on it, working with Raul, that frankly, I think legally we had to take it to first reading again. The reason it's here is that I believe it's very important that we pass this. I think we don't know exactly every way we can control and tame the entertainment district during spring break and these high-impact weekends, but I know we have to. I think our residents expect it. I think I felt, as many of you did, that it was unsafe in the city at moments in certain parts of the city. So this legislation has been reworked. Raul is going to explain it in a moment in great detail. But my hope is that we'll pass it today. In fact, I hope we can even sign a letter that will go out so that folks that are telling people to come to our community where no rules apply will realize that the rules apply and they need to go somewhere else if that's what they're looking for. I think this is important. And Raul, why don't you explain what this legislation does, since it's similar to what we looked at last time, but it's been narrowed, I think, is the best way to describe it.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. As you said, we considered this ordinance on first reading along with several other ordinances used to mitigate some issues that we experienced most recently with high-impact periods such as spring break. And again, this ordinance was intended to be, to use the metaphor that was used so well at the April meeting, one tool in a toolbox that we can use to balance the vacation experience of our visitors to the beach with the quality of life of our residents and our stakeholders, our business holders. So after an extensive public discussion at the April meeting, one of the things that I really took away from it was that the ordinance which was presented to you, which was intended to help us during high impact periods, and again, just to refresh your memory, high impact period is something that the manager declares based upon criteria in an ordinance that we already have, which we will also be refining and bringing to you at the May meeting, so that he can institute certain measures to mitigate the crowds of residents visitors that come to our beach within a concentrated area. And we may have high impact periods all over the year, ranging from New Year's Eve to Memorial Day to spring break to the Food and Wine Festival and Pride. And some of these events puts a bit of strain on our local resources. And what we've done is, with these ordinances, this being one of them, we have hopefully given the manager an assortment of immediate measures that he can take to mitigate these, as I said before. So this one specifically is intended to allow the manager during a high-impact period, for example, I'm going to use one that just passed, such as spring break, where he declares a high-impact period based upon criteria in the ordinance. This ordinance allows him to suspend or not issue business tax receipts, which are occupational licenses, for promoters promoting events at alcoholic beverage establishments. How did we narrow this ordinance so that it's better tailored to really address the immediate problem, which is the concentration of people that flows into the entertainment district? And because we don't permit these events through a special event permit like we do, for example, Food and Wine and Pride and the street party on New Year's Eve, or because we don't have an agreement with these events like we do with the Aaron C. Show, we're not able ahead of time to mitigate the potential traffic, noise, and other intended consequences that these events may draw. And looking at promoter-driven events especially, we did a lot of research between first reading and this first reading now. And the reason, as the mayor said, that this is a new first reading is because we've really rewritten the ordinance to address the specific problems. The promoter industry has radically changed in the last decade thanks to social media. You know, whereas before you promoted an event by handing out leaflets and flyers, you know, or advertising it, you know, you were only able to reach a limited amount of people. Now what promoters are doing months ahead of these known special event weekends on the beach, where we're going to attract a lot of young people, you know, looking to have a good time and party on South Beach, is that they are advertising promoted events, usually at clubs or other alcoholic beverage establishments within our entertainment district, and they're reaching thousands of people, and they are selling tickets well beyond the occupational loads of these clubs. So what happens is, number one, these promoter-produced events are generating thousands of people, a fraction of which will actually get into the club for the event. And the spillover and the unintended consequences on our streets is causing not only noise, litter, things like underage drinking for people that can't get in but want to congregate around the area. You know, if the party's not inside, we'll take the party outside. So they're having a whole bunch of deleterious effects. And this effect is being felt most in what we've come to call our entertainment district. And that's one of the things that we concentrated this ordinance. Before, this ordinance was intended to address this issue citywide. It's not really happening citywide. These promoter-driven events are being promoted at alcoholic beverage establishments within Ocean Drive from 5th to 16th, Collins Avenue from 5th to 16th, and Washington Avenue from 5th to 16th. And possibly based on a discussion that we had today at neighborhoods, it could possibly be at an area further north. But let me give you some statistics of just that area that I just described, and that includes the side streets. There are 205, and we not only verified this with licensing, but I actually sent my paralegal out one day last week during spring break. And I sent him to Ocean Collins in Washington, and I had him do a hand count of establishments, you know, like bars and clubs and other areas that sell alcohol. And the statistics that we got is there are 205 active business tax receipts regarding the sale of alcoholic beverages. There are 310 within the entertainment district. There are 310 establishments selling alcoholic beverages citywide. What this means is that 66% of our alcoholic beverage establishments are located within the entertainment district. So we wanted to focus the promoter ordinance on events that are taking place within that area. That's the first thing we did to narrow it. The other thing was, you all raised very valid concerns, both at the meeting and in my discussions with all of you afterwards, because a lot of you either reached out to me individually with your concerns after the meeting, or we had very good conversations prior to the ordinance being placed on the agenda. And the ordinance as drafted was not very clear as to who was and who wasn't a promoter. You know, so what we really wanted to target was that third party that is has some kind of agreement with an alcoholic beverage establishment, let's say a nightclub within the entertainment district, to hands-on promote, manage, and operate an event. A promoter is not, as Commissioner Arriola very eloquently asked, a promoter is not, for example, somebody merely lending the cachet of their name to an event, such as, you know, let's say, you know, the Dalai Lama, you know, a night of meditation at Mango's. A promoter is not intended to be, I know, but I just really...
I would go to that.
So many of the hypotheticals that you brought up were compelling that it really made me go beyond what we were originally doing and look at the definition of promoter. A promoter is not intended to be a 501c3 corporation that is holding an event on behalf of itself. A promoter is not intended to be someone that is issued a city special events permit for an event within an area during a high impact period, or that has an agreement such as the Air and Sea Show for an event during those areas. The reason being is that these promoter events virtually sneak up on us. They do not coordinate with us, and some of them, the worst actors, wreak mayhem. And it's not just us. I had the opportunity to look at other cities that have been dealing with this issue, such as New York, the city of West Hollywood, which is very, very diverse and similar to Miami Beach in that it has a concentrated, you know, entertainment district and a lot of residents and businesses around. And, you know, the issue, again, as I said, is social media has changed everything. So what this ordinance will do in a nutshell is it will allow us, first of all, to be proactive. When Jimmy declares that a high-impact event exists, and we know by now, having dealt with high-impact events for a number of years, we can pinpoint what the historic high-impact event periods are going to be. So once a high-impact event is declared, this ordinance kicks in within the entertainment districts, and it would preclude alcoholic beverage establishments within that limited area from having promoter-produced events because of the already concentrated activity going on in that area and the strain on our resources as a result of so many people intent on, for want of a better word, partying in a very, very concentrated area. Again, this is not the antidote, but this is what we hope to be a very effective tool. And the way that I would like this to work is, number one, if we could, if we know what these high impact event periods are going to be, then the next logical conclusion would be that, you know, we can go online ourselves and be proactive and identify who's promoting what at a club. And when, Mayor, when you mentioned sending out a letter, you know, both our hope, as we discussed, is, you know, is that once this ordinance, hopefully, if it gets adopted on second reading, which will be May 8th, along with the other spring break-inspired ordinances, and again, I'm only using the term spring break because we just got done with that high-impact period. But what we hope to do is we hope to issue a letter to every alcoholic beverage establishment within the entertainment district and every promoter with a current BTR in the city and tell them that we have adopted this ordinance, that during high impact periods where the manager has, you know, provided notice to the commission and the community that from, you know, X date to X date, you know, we will be experiencing a high impact period, they will be prohibited from producing promoter-driven promoter events at alcoholic beverage establishments. And the reason we want to be proactive is we want to give the clubs notice that, you know, the alcoholic beverage establishments notice that if this is going to happen, then if they are having an event that is not permitted within the entertainment district, they could be subject to a civil fine of $1,000. And also something that we also added, the immediate remedy that the city has the right to go in there and shut down the event for the night, for the duration of the event. You know, so this is the first thing that we hope. We hope that the letter that the mayor is referring to will act as a deterrent. The next thing is, once we go online and we know that these events are happening anyways, you know, it'll be easier for us to send a cease and desist letter to these people ahead of time, letting them know that if they go forward to an event, not only will the promoter be subject to penalties, but the alcoholic beverage establishment will be subject to penalties. And finally, if after everything that we do, we do find that during a high impact period, let's say at a nightclub in the entertainment district, there's a dance or other entertainment event that's going on, that's a promoted event that that is not allowed because the promoter does not have a BTR to do this. We have the ability to shut down that event. And maybe what it takes is, you know, just, you know, sending out, number one, these notices and shutting down one event to send the message that this kind of conduct will not be tolerated. Because at the end of the day, there is a lot of anecdotal data that I got from the police department. And, you know, what's going on within the clubs, you know, a lot of the time at these events, these promotional events are magnets because, you know, they are promoted as the place to be on that night. So not only do you get usually younger kids, because the demographic is, you know, the kids that are out of high school and college and, you know, the 20-somethings, but you get a lot of kids that are underage too, that you know, that may get into the club with a fake ID, and we have another ordinance in May that helps us to deal with that, and may engage in underage drinking. You get loitering outside of the clubs. There's a tremendous amount of noise. There's a tremendous amount of litter, and it taxes. It not only taxes our city's resources, but it really affects the quality of life of our residents and businesses. We don't have the luxury of living in an area where we have a segregated business district that is surrounded by warehouses or places that are not residential. We have condos that back up into the entertainment district. And, you know, we realize that people during businesses during high impact periods are entitled, you know, to operate and make money. But we have to balance this with the quality of life of our residents. So I hope that we've come back with a narrowly tailored ordinance that is more acceptable to you. And more importantly, I've spoken to some of the businesses within the entertainment district, and while I can't speak for all of them, they seem pleased with these results because, you know, I think part of it also is, as you'll see in May, and the discussion that we had in neighborhoods today, which was really good with regard to these high impact period, is really tightening that up too, and giving Jimmy discretion, but not unbridled discretion.
Okay. Thank you. All right, let me put this in context and get us into the right posture. You know, the way I've looked at this, members, is this. In the same way that Airbnb is an end around our residential zoning laws, what's really happening is when we have an event here, people want to have events in our city, engage us so that we know if they have to bring in police or we need to close a street down, or they need to do certain things. We have that interaction.
That's right.
When you have these...
That's very important.
Yeah, I mean, because basically we can make sure that health and safety issues are attended to. And you see it in every one of our events. And we have, I mean, Pride is a pretty full event in a lot of... It has a lot of dimension to it, but we know how to do it, because the organizers sit at a table with our folks who do permitting and say, this is what we need, this is what we're going to close down. The police say, well, this will be great. And fire rescue says, and if it's hot, we'll have our guys here and here and here. And all these things are taken care of. What happens with these promoted events is that, especially in these high impact times, the people promoting them really don't care how many people show up. Because if you go to Eventbrite, there's dozens of events for Memorial Day weekend, for spring break, for all of these high impact weekends. And typically, if it was an establishment promoting it, I don't worry that Liv or the Fillmore are going to overbook, because they can't do that. They know what will happen if they do that. But a promoter from another state online or from wherever can sell thousands of tickets more than there are spaces in the venue, and it doesn't really matter because he's got the money, and they'll go on and be in the street without anywhere to go, perhaps upset. So these are the events we're trying to stop. And by the way, I know this is not a silver bullet. I know it's not. But I think we have to give the manager and our police and the folks that do our permitting and our code as many tools as possible. So my hope is that we'll pass it on for a shooting. If we do, I'm going to sign this letter that Jimmy's going to sign as well, and we're going to send it to our alcohol and beverage establishments. We'll let the folks on Eventbrite know the same thing, that if they're selling tickets to come to our streets as a meeting point, which they really can't do, or if they're overbooking somewhere else, we're going to stop it. And maybe that will change the market such that people won't decide that this is the place to go. I'm worried we're going to have too many jet skis around Monument Island, frankly. Yeah. And that's really an issue right now. If you look at, I went through the, I mean, that, you know, they're telling people to drink all day and we'll give you jet skis and it'll be great. And we just had this horrible accident we're going to discuss in a few moments. The recipe here is not one that I'm comfortable with, so we've got to change it. And that's what I think we all agree on. So I would like some discussion now on it. If there are questions, this is first reading. I put it up today so that we could get it done in anticipation of Memorial Day weekend and have it in effect. But we're going to, if you pass it, I'm going to sign this, as is Jimmy, and we're going to let everybody know tomorrow that the rules are different. Commissioner Aleman.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor Gelbart. Thank you, City Attorney, for the work. It is a much improved version. So I'm going to support it, but I did have a question, because we just earlier today had a neighborhoods committee where Commissioner Gongora sponsored a narrowing and a specification to our definition of a high-impact event and introduced a concept of a high-impact zone. And so I'm wondering about, because this still talks about the entertainment district, and yet just a few hours ago we sort of modified to say we think we need to be talking about high-impact zones more than just the entertainment district, because that sometimes, you know, it's we could cast a little bit larger net. So I appreciate that it's not citywide. I'd like for us to talk about whether it's just the entertainment district or should be a little bit larger than that. I think that's probably my main question. But I really want to emphasize, Mayor, something that you said, and I want to say it again. Sometimes repetition is the key to learning, which is we have a special events process. So for any legitimate producer that wants to have an event, even during a high-impact time and even in a high-impact zone, we have a process to accommodate that. But that process requires the producer to come and work with the city. It requires them to have a security plan. It requires them to have a sanitation plan, emergency evacuation plans, and the like. So, and those are really important things for making sure that the public is safe and that the participants are safe and that the city is left in the same condition as prior to the event. So, it's not that we're saying no to all events. It's saying you got to work with us. And I think that's very, very important. But I'd like to hear maybe, City Attorney, what you think about, because you were present for the earlier discussion about a high-impact zone versus the entertainment district.
Right. Thank you, Commissioner Aleman, because I think that's important when we look at this again in May. The discussion that we had today in neighborhoods, which is also a very extensive discussion when we talked about it in April, was, as you know, for tools like this to be activated, the first step is that the manager needs to declare what Commissioner Aleman referred to as there's going to be a high impact period on the beach, So that could be a weekend, it could be a week, it could be longer. We haven't looked at that. That ordinance, as some of you who were on the days recall, was enacted for an event called Floatopia, which kind of wreaked havoc on the beach itself. And we wanted to take some immediate measures to help mitigate unpermitted events like that. But now, having been able to look at the high impact ordinance, and this was something also that Commissioner Gongora brought up in committee, we definitely, and we are, going to look at our high impact event period ordinance. And number one, go narrow with that too. Number one, define what a high impact period is very narrowly, because really what a high impact period it is when you have, I mean, just to put it broadly, when you have a crush of people, usually visitors, you know, descend upon you in a very concentrated area. That's the second point that Commissioner Alamon made is, you know, in this ordinance, you know, we define the entertainment district as kind of a, you know, kind of the area in question. What Commissioner Alamon talked about and what was discussed at Neighborhoods today by you too, Commissioner Gongora, was when a high impact period is declared, we really know now from past experience that the impact is going to be felt within a certain concentrated in the area of the city. And you talked about defining that as a high impact zone and maybe going a little farther north to 23rd Street. And I'd have to talk about the police department about that. But again, it would narrow the area. The third, which I think is great, because number one, it balances the needs of the residents and the visitors with the needs of the businesses. The businesses don't want to think that you're giving the manager unbridled powers for an indefinite period of time citywide. You know, because now you've got a good manager. Maybe one day you'll have a not-so-great manager who doesn't agree with the way you want this ordinance implemented. Lastly,
I want to get a response, though. The question is, geographically, where do you want it? Where do you recommend it
to
go?
Yeah, thank you for bringing me around.
And can we pass? Because I do want to pass reading and be able to send the letter.
I think what Commissioner Alamon.
We can do both of those things.
Yeah, correct me if I'm wrong. I think what Commissioner Alamon is saying is she wants the definitions to be compatible. Right. So instead of saying instead of defining the entertainment district here, defining it as within a high impact zone, and then the high impact period ordinance would define that zone, which is basically the same, but maybe going a little north, right, Commissioner?
We don't have that.
That's not an ordinance
that a thing yet.
So maybe we need to pass it like this, and when we come with Commissioner Gongora's redefinition,
correct,
fix this to match.
Correct. It'll be a thing in May, so I can fix both for May.
All right, so we can do it as is.
Yes,
and
sir.
Then when Commissioner Gongora, that's going to come here eventually?
Correct. Yeah, we passed.
Go ahead.
Sure. Thank you. Neighborhoods today, we had a pretty lengthy discussion as the last item. I was concerned last time that the definition for high impact period is so broad that it could be almost every weekend of the year, certainly every weekend during high season. So we talked about, and I worked on some language with the city attorney, narrowing how we define that to these types of periods that we're really looking to go after. Number one, creating the zones, which you just talked about, and also limiting it into a time frame. I think we said like 72 hours that the manager exerts this power and then has to bring it to the commission to take action if there's some kind of continued problem. I think those were the three additions.
Yes.
So I'm going to support this today, provided we also take into that definition of high impact that we're working on that impacts all these ordinances. But I do have to say, listening to all of this, I'm glad I grew up in the 90s in my age, when I was able to go to the party where everybody was at and have a good time and not worry about all of these problems, because listening to us up here, clearly we're like not young for starters, not out having fun. And it's kind of sad that we have to pass these ordinances and that I'm reluctantly going along with this just because the situation is so out of control in these high impact periods, because that's part of why I moved to Miami Beach when I did, from quiet Coral Gables, because I wanted to be near the action and things that were happening. So I hope that we don't get too heavy-handed with sending a message that Miami Beach is no longer fun, and that this just serves as a tool during these more narrowly defined high-impact periods that the manager may or may not need to use, depending on what future high-impact times may bring.
Okay, Commissioner First Malikoff, then Commissioner Samuelin.
I agree with your changes and so forth. I just had a question that probably has nothing to do with this ordinance. Do we have a scooter policy in place for high-impact? Should we also have a jet ski ordinance in place? Because the mayor mentioned jet skis going crazy, and there may be many more boats, crafts on the water. Are there any types of restrictions so that we can place with?
We do not have a similar ordinance which prohibits the rentals of jet skis within, for example, high impact periods. And one of the issues that we have with jet skis is, you know, you can rent a jet ski on the mainland and ride it over to the beach. And a lot of those, some waters we can regulate, but there are other waters that we can't regulate.
But can we regulate jet skis from that rent them in Miami Beach?
I would have to take a look at that, Commissioner, but I could certainly research that.
Or other types of watercraft.
Okay.
Anyone else? Oh, Commissioner Samuelin.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm supportive of this ordinance today. We certainly want Miami Beach to be fun. It's welcoming to everyone that will play by the rules. And what I think this helps us to do is try and keep this place safe. I'm concerned about resident quality of life and noise and all of that, but I'm especially concerned about the safety of some of the folks coming here. I think some of these environments have become unsafe, and we need to take action. I'm struck by the data. The city attorney, who did a fine job presenting this, has shown with the concentration of the alcohol establishments in the entertainment zone. You know, we didn't have issues in Sunset Harbor. It wasn't 41st Street. We're not talking about 71st Street. You know, we're really talking about a very focused area where these problems have become very significant. With that said, I just want to close with what I believe is a key success factor, and that is proactive enforcement. We talked about this at Neighborhoods. Everything we're doing tonight is only as good as the administration's ability to get in front of it. So this problem is caused to some extent by social media, and everyone sort of knows where the party is. We need to know where the party is. We need to be out in front of this. And then we need our police department code to be in touch with the city attorney's office so we can get ahead of the game. So I just want to sort of set that expectation that we need proactive enforcement for this to be successful, but I will fully support this tonight.
Commissioner Arreola.
Yeah, so I'm not going to support this. I'm not going to support probably most of the spring break, quote unquote, legislation, because I don't think it's going to solve anything. I think this is us reacting. I think we're going to be back here, hopefully not after Memorial Day, but more likely after next year's spring break, passing yet more legislation. Being reactive to what happened, you know, the period in question that we're trying to fix. I think there are better ways to think about this, and I want to challenge us to try to be more creative than just simply trying to ban things, because banning things hasn't really worked well for us. The spring break phenomenon has been going on for a long time, Memorial Day even longer. And I agree with you, Raul, that, you know, social media makes it easier and cheaper to promote events, but high-impact weekends and large crowds have been going on in Miami Beach long, long before social media was a thing. Everybody knows we're here. They come here because it's a beautiful beach. We have great assets for people to enjoy. It's an easy place for most folks, particularly from large cities, to take a direct flight to. So it's not going to go away. We're an attractive place to come. And so I wonder if there's better ways, rather than trying to ban promoters, engage with them, work with them, put requirements on them to have better and higher class type events, more security, off-duty police, regulate hours, regulate capacity. These are tools that we already have. We already have capacity limitations. We have restrictions on underage admission into clubs and underage drinking. There's all kinds of laws on the books for unruly behavior, like fighting. We have laws against smoking marijuana, open containers, you know, cruising around. we have a lot of tools to try to stem some of the behavior that we worry about. And I also think about, what was it about spring break that freaked us out? Certainly the large crowds, but we're used to large crowds. We all celebrated together Pride just a couple weeks ago. Huge crowds, even bigger potentially than the spring break crowds on Ocean Drive. Yet we embraced it. The stuff that freaked us out over spring break were the fights. A lot of those fights happened during the day on the beach. Nothing to do with promoters, nothing to do with clubs. Or they happened in the street at night. Again, nothing to do with promoters. If we're going to say, okay, you can't have parties, you can't be in clubs, where are these kids going to go? They're going to stay in the street. We're going to continue having more and more of the same problems. So I'm asking us to think about this problem in a different way other than just being banning things. You know, we talk about all of the concentration of alcohol establishments in the MXC district. That's true. Yet if you talk to the Ocean Drive businesses, business was down during spring break. Hotel occupancy was relatively flat from 2018 to 2019. Our garage occupancy was down in double digits. So, you know, I don't know that the crowds were larger this year. I have not seen any data that indicates that. The only anecdotal data we have was that we had more calls to our fire rescue, and that was on a small sample on a single day, 66 calls last year versus 88 calls this year. That's a really small sample. To say the crowds were up 33% based on that. So I think we are not really going to move the needle in trying to tackle this problem. I think we're going to pass legislation that is going to put us in a difficult situation in justifying behaving in a certain way on high-impact weekends. Spring break, Memorial Day are the two that I'm most worried about for obvious reasons, because Pride, Art Deco weekend, our Basel weekend, Super Bowl weekend, all high-impact weekends. We're going to have promoters wanting to do things. You know, you can have BMW, you can have Mercedes-Benz wanting to rent out a club to have a promotion. And what are we going to tell them that we're going to tell somebody during Memorial Day or spring break and justify it with a straight face? Going to be hard. A lot of the promoters that we're all worried about, you talked about Orange Crush. I don't even know who that is. Nobody seems to know who that is. There's no event on Miami Beach that's actually has an address on Miami Beach. So what would we solve with that case? And I worry about, you know, this. We're sort of being mocked, you know, because we are saying, oh, my God, these promoters are doing this stuff. I mean, there's nothing to stop somebody from taking out an ad on social media right now saying, hey, have a party, 50,000 people come, and just embarrass us, make us freak out, have these public hearings, and it's just some kid in his dorm room doing it to mock us, to troll us. So, again, I encourage us to think about this in a different way and to try to use the tools that we already have to enforce our laws and then possibly do the opposite of what we're doing, which is engage with promoters and establishments to have responsible-type events, keep people off of our streets, improve the quality of the events, attract a different tourist base. That's the way I would go with this. So I'm not going to be supportive of this.
Commissioner Gangora.
I agree with a lot of what you said. And I was similarly not super supportive or receptive to these because I agree with almost all of our comments. We're just looking at the problem in a different way. I think we have a lot of laws on the book that we haven't been strictly enforcing. And we've already, as a body, let our administration and our police know that we want to enforce the laws that already exist on the books. But although our role shifts between branches of government, we are primarily the legislative body. We make the laws, we set the budget, we hire people. So that's what we do when there's a problem. What kind of a new law can we create to help address it? And I don't know if this law is going to help address the problem or not, but quite frankly, these high-impact problems are out of control. Our residents don't like it. So instead of coming out against it, I'm going to support it on first reading, but I'm trying to refine, define, and limit what these high-impact emergency powers are to those periods that are really necessary and take a leap of faith that if this ultimately passes second reading, and I'm not committed to voting on it on second reading until I see what it looks like, that our city manager and administration would use it extremely cautiously and only in the most dire of circumstances.
Sure. Commissioner Ariola.
I just want to follow up, you know, again, to challenge us to really think through these problems, whether it's this problem or any of the problems we try to solve. We typically you know, find ourselves in a reactionary capacity. And because of the deliberative process, and there's seven of us up here, we end up with a better piece of legislation more often than not than we would at first blush. Like, the stuff that we looked at last time was way, way, way overbroad, and I didn't support it then. I think we definitely have crafted a better piece of legislation than we had before, so I want to acknowledge the work of all my colleagues and the legal team on that. But I still want to challenge us to – I'd rather see us use the tools that we have already in place that I don't think we're using effectively than continue to pass more legislation and hope that, you know, things are going to get better, because I don't fully have the confidence that if we're not already applying the tools that we already have, what's going to give us confidence that yet more legislation, which is going to scoop in people that we don't want to be affected by this, is going to have any impact on these weekends. Just a question. So, like I was saying, the Winter White Party, I'm not sure who organizes that, but would that be theoretically affected by this?
The White Party in which one here? On the
well, beach? Yeah, I know it used to be in Vizcaya, but like those types of events that we all celebrate and love.
The Winter Party.
Yeah. If they were to have it at the Cameo or something, would that be a problem?
Well, this would be Winter Party is the Winter Party itself is permitted through a special event. But, for example, if Jimmy were to declare that Winter Party weekend was a high-impact period, then if they're having a promoted event at the Cameo, in other words, if they're not producing the event, if the Winter Party, the nonprofit that is the Winter Party Committee, is not producing the event, then yes, they would be affected by this ordinance if the manager suspends BTRs during that period.
And this is the issue that I don't want to get you in and then get us in, which is those type of weekends are high impact, Art Deco weekend, Art Basel weekend, because the definition of high impact is very broad.
Right.
Pull it up in a second. So you don't do it then, but you do it during Memorial Day weekend, you do it during spring break, we're going to get called out for being racist. That's what I'm worried about. Because how do you justify, based on crowd size, it's the same crowd size those weekends. Super Bowl will be even bigger than spring break. But I doubt that Jimmy's going to tell BMW, no, you can't rent out the Cameo for a party.
Well, let me respond in a few ways. And I appreciate the issues you raise, and I think it's important to have these informed discussions. But understand something. You mentioned, Commissioner, about that we haven't had the problem. I think Senor Frogs had literally a melee on one of these promoted events. It wasn't, I mean, it literally was, the police were over there a few times because of fights breaking out everywhere because too many people were there. We've had experiences of the Cameo and others getting overbooked. I mean, typically what happens is that people who want to have an event have the interaction with the city. For whatever reason, these high-impact weekends that have these other these out-of-town promoted events, we can't control the number of people coming here. And by the way, it's not hard to figure out the problem, because if you look at the promotions, 18-plus is a very common promotion. They want 18-year-olds coming to these events. You know, the no rules are common. Drink all day are common. And so, to answer your question, if any of these establishments wants to do an event, they can. This doesn't control that. If a not-for-profit wants to do it, they can. This doesn't do anything about that.
And I wanted to answer two of Commissioner Zariola's questions because, by the way, he and I had a very intense conversation the day after the ordinance. You know, so I respect his concerns, and I also appreciate the narrow drafting. But for example, and I know you expressed the same concerns. That's why we tried to create more distinct exemptions from what is a promoter to really address the ill. So, for example, BMW renting out the Cameo for an event might not be a promoted event, because if they're just renting out the Cameo for a night, some of these events are private by invitation only. Those aren't considered promoted events, where they just rent it out, you know, and let the Cameo self-promote it. That's not a promoted event. But you are correct that there may be instances that fall through the cracks that are good events that we may want, but we have to try and apply it equally to everybody. But there may be some things that
that are just a gray area?
Mayor, the reason I raise these is not to be difficult. It's, you know, and many of us are lawyers. You know, you raise these hypotheticals to stress test the legislation, and we already created. You already identified some loopholes. So clever promoters or club owners will design the promoted event so that it meets our legal requirements. In the case of the Senor Frogs episode, from what I know of it, you know, it had overflow capacity. We already have building code and fire code protections on going over capacity. We also have a limited number of institutions in our MXE district that you, Jimmy, and your staff can just go talk to one-on-one, say, guys, don't put your business in jeopardy by putting the city in a really bad spot. Control your doors, control your promoters, et cetera. I think that's a much better, having a really mature dialogue with these business owners, and it's not that many, is a better approach than passing legislation that gives, you know, broad powers to our city manager. And you're right, the day Jimmy's not here and we have somebody else in charge, who knows how they'll apply this? And, you know, the uneven application, you know, somebody then will say the city manager targets one business and not another business. I mean, I don't want to put us, our administration, in a really compromising situation because we have legislation on the books that has overbroad powers. Then it's selective enforcement. These are among the things I worry about. I think we have enough laws on our books to stem the problems. I also think that the stuff that freaked us all out on social media, the street fights and the fights on the beach, nothing to do with clubs or promoter-driven activity.
So, Mayor, let me just a couple things. First of all, we do work with the clubs. Our new night captain, Javon Campbell, is doing a really good job. Every weekend there can be issues, and I know police are working with them. So we do use those tools that are there. On a lot of the potential high-impact weekends, a lot of these events are by special event permits. You take Basel, a lot of the hotels, I probably issue over 24 special event permits at hotels. Winter Party, a lot of special events. Pride is a huge, one major special event for Ocean Drive. So a lot of what we see on special event weekends are often permitted because of the venues they're using. The chat, you know, and I appreciate the trust that I'm not going to overuse it. I think in the 2+ years, maybe or three, I forget how long, we've had the high-impact ordinance. I can count on one hand the number of times I've invoked it when we thought there were issues. So trust me, whether you approve it or not, I've used it very sparingly.
So, but here's the issue, and you're totally right with everything you said. The problem is that in the past, we have, as a body, said no special event permits on Memorial Day weekend. So this is the scenario that I'm worried about, is that we are targeting certain weekends, and you can't really justify it based on crowd size or any of it because we allow it other times. This is a problem, guys.
Yeah, to respond, I think that there's been no weekend like spring break and St. Patrick's Day, that weekend that I've seen in the city in my life. I've never seen us have to, a year ago, we closed down a causeway, and I've never seen, we literally had to close down a causeway because we couldn't govern the streets anymore. That's what scares a police chief, a mayor, and a commission, because you no longer feel like it's orderly enough. And we're not asking it. We don't need to be that orderly, but we certainly need to be orderly enough to tell our residents it's safe. So, I appreciate that we have a different view on this, Commissioner, and I think your voice is incredibly important. But I would take any idea, and I'd urge my colleagues to come with any idea you have. But this is one, because to me, the problem has been, once there are tens of thousands of people who have responded to an online advertisement that they paid a ticket to come here because they're 18 years old and they were told they could drink, or they are told that no rules apply, once they're here, we end up doing stuff that I think I don't want to do. I don't want to send police in protective gear onto the street, onto the beach. That's a terrible image of our city. But we had to do it. And if we get to that point, I know we've got to try to stop it earlier than that. And we have tried a lot of things. The weekends that where we don't have the problems, they are, not only are they permitted, but they don't have these outside groups promoting sort of a mass event. And it's the mass events that have really been most difficult for us, when there's just too many people in a 2-block area and the police realize that the enforcement options just don't exist in a way that we would be comfortable with. And I actually think our police have shown amazing restraint in a lot of respects and made very difficult decisions that I don't think most other police forces ever have to even confront. But that said, I hate to put them in that position because it's so difficult. So you may be right. This may not be an answer. It may not be a substantial enough answer to outweigh perhaps some of the unintended consequences. But I think we should try it and see if it does have an impact. Look, my hope is that the community that's buying these tickets might say to themselves, well, if they're going to not, they're going to stop the Cameo from promoting or having somebody promote an event, or they're going to tell one of these establishments that there may not be a party there, then maybe they won't buy tickets, or maybe they'll go somewhere else. We have to, our place can't be a destination for these kinds of events. It's just that simple, because the events are promoted as go crazy events, drink and go crazy, and that's not what our city can embrace or tolerate. Commissioner Alemán.
Like you, I appreciate where Commissioner Arroyo is coming from and the purposefulness of the discussion. I appreciate that. You know, but I do want to respond to something. The reason that previously we have said that there are no special event permits during a particular high-impact period is that there were so many unsanctioned, unknown, unpredictable, unmanageable events in the city at that same time that we didn't feel it was appropriate to add on to that with special events. This is not a silver bullet. It's one of a family of measures and changes that you, Mayor, and others have been implementing over the past month or so, and I think we'll probably still see a few more. It's not meant to be. I don't think you intended it to be the end-all, be-all of how we make sure that the city is safe and fun during high-impact periods. But it could help. It's worth trying. And if we can get at the unsanctioned events, leaving the special events permit process open, we can end up working with commercial producers and people that can bring some great events to the city that come with all the proper trappings about security and sanitation and fire safety and other measures. So I did want to remind us that the reason that we closed the special events door was because of the volume of unsanctioned events, and that's a door that can be reopened by us.
Okay. Anyone going to move the item?
I'll move the item.
I'll second it. Okay, members, anyone else want to be heard before we take the roll? It's first reading. We're not going to public. I don't think we need public testimony.
Commissioner Arriola.
No.
Commissioner Gongora.
Yes, on first reading.
Vice Mayor Malakoff.
Yes.
Commissioner Samuelin.
Yes.
Commissioner Alemán.
Yes.
Commissioner Steinberg. Mayor Gelber.
Yes.
Motion passes. Second reading public hearing is May 8th.
Do you need anything on the letter?
I'm signing. I think the letter's done. I'm gonna give this to the manager, and we'll send it out to the folks and let people know that you've got this in your toolkit now, and I hope you use it in a way that tames this problem. Okay, let's move if we can.
We take out R7B. We've got folks from Florida International University. Rafael.
R7B is accept 2019 Gulf South Summit Monetary Award.
Mayor and Commissioners, this is what appears to be a simple item, but it is accepting a $500, which is our 50% share of an award that Florida National University and the City of Miami Beach received from the Gulf South Summit, which is, and Saif, who's the Director of Engagement, you come up with your team, and I want to also ask Leslie Rosenfeld, who sort of Chief Education Officer, among other hats she wears. Gulf South Summit is a group that represents all the universities in the South, essentially, from Texas to Virginia, all the major universities across the South, and recently they acknowledged the great partnership between the City of Miami Beach and FIU, in fact, almost formal collaboration, as something they wanted to acknowledge as really being something unique in the region. And before I just ask Saif to say a few words, for those who aren't familiar with it, it started literally almost 6 years ago when President Rosenberg, who when he's not living in the president's house on campus, is a Miami Beach resident, invited me to come visit him and talk about how do we begin to develop a partnership here on a lot of different issues. And 6 years later, it's really, we've got five working groups that focus on education, transportation, history and culture, coastal resilience and adaptation, and messaging. Some of the things that have come out of this, an internship program where over 80 FIU students, both undergrad and grad, have participated in internship programs in the city, eight of whom have actually gone on to full employment. So it's become a wonderful entranceway for folks. When I got here, we had zero dual enrollment classes at Nautilus or Beach High. This past year, we have 14 courses, which translates into 25 classes for more than 500 high school students a year. We estimate over $1 million probably in college savings money for the parents of the kids who've taken these courses. Our after-school program, there are currently 5 days a week, Fisher Feinberg and Biscayne Elementary are visited by FIU undergrad students, offering 14 classes to more than 220 elementary students. Wow. On issues of, I think this is information and computer sciences. In the arts and culture area, they've digitized over 45,000 documents in our archives, and they're open access to not just the city, but to anyone in the world can access our documents. In the area we talked about green earlier, back in 2016, FIU professors conducted leadership in energy and environmental design lead training for more than 20 city employees preparing for a new green building ordinance. And we're now in the process of a joint planning grant between FIU and Miami Beach for an industry university cooperative center that will partner cities and universities to focus on these kind of issues. So those are just a few examples of an incredible partnership that was recognized really at a national, regional, national level. Saif, if you want to just say a few words, it's been just a wonderful thing.
Good evening, everyone, Mr. Manager, Mr. Mayor, honorable members of the commission. It's a delight to be here. FIU has been partnering with the City of Miami Beach now for over 5+ years, as Mr. Manager mentioned. The ability to partner with Dr. Rosenfeld, as well as a number of other units and departments in the city, really is emblematic of our FIU City of Miami Beach partnership being a model university municipal partnership in our region. The Gulf South Summit recognition memorializes that when a university is able to come together with the city, our scholars and our students are able to unlock opportunities. As the manager mentioned, our Department of History is engaged in digital preservation. You have been able to make investments which have resulted in over $1 million worth of savings for Miami Beach residents, for students here to be able to take dual enrollment courses with FIU faculty, as well as Miami-Dade County Public Schools teachers that have been accredited by us. I want to also acknowledge my colleague, Dr. Genesis Ramirez, who works very closely with Leslie on this partnership. We hope in the years to come to be able to build on this. This is really something that's a real passion project for our president, Dr. Rosenberg, who extends his regrets in not being able to be here tonight. But we thank you, Mr. Mayor. We thank you, members of the commission. We thank you, Mr. Manager. And we really hope that we make as many cities and other universities in our region as jealous as possible about the collective impact that we've been able to have on this partnership and be able to build on this from strength to strength in the years to come. Thank you so much for this.
Thank you. Thank you all.
Thank you. I do want to acknowledge Leslie has been our point person on this, sure, and a lot of staff that work on the committee, but Leslie has really been a point on this from the beginning.
Well, do we have to vote? Show it done. Show it done by acclamation.
So approved by acclamation, R7B.
Okay, let's get to...
Can we do a quick thank you just for their support on the dual enrollment program in Miami Beach? Means a lot to us. Thank you.
Thank you for giving Jimmy something to do. every week or every how often? Are you not teaching? All right. Okay. All right, we're going to move to R7D. Call R7D, please.
R7D is urge U.S. Coast Guard review safety of government cut jetties, requested by Mayor Gelber and the entire City Commission.
Okay, so members, as everybody knows, three people died in the last week. At a boating accident on the government cut on the jetties. That means that it's the second accident in 3 years, because three people died about 3 years ago, almost 3 years ago, at the same area. So six people have now died. Monday I asked some of our staff to go back to what had happened last time and figure out what we can do. And unfortunately, we do not control that area. It is exclusively within the province of the Coast Guard. But we reached out to the Coast Guard. We reached out to the Corps to ask them. We reached out to Fish and Wildlife. We talked to Mayor Jimenez's office. This commission in 2017 also asked the Coast Guard at that time to please look at this area to see whether it needs more lighting, to see if it needs something to assure that it's safer. The Coast Guard has a system they use, and they looked after after Jose Fernandez died along with two other people in his vessel, and they at that time determined that they didn't think anything else was needed. So what we put on, and I think we're all co-sponsors of this, is a resolution asking them to do this again. I understand that they have a study system that tells them whether something is dangerous, but I think when you have six people who have died, six lifeless people, right out, you know, literally as close to our city as you can be in the water, that they ought to either reevaluate the system they're using or just decide that that's enough of a neon sign where they need to do something to make it safer. So I put this on. I know others have also, I know Commissioner Gongora is interested, others have all reached out. So I don't move for me, I move for all of you. But I'd urge us to unanimously support this and tell the Coast Guard who control this area, and they're fine people, the Coast Guard, but this is really not an acceptable thing to be happening, and we're the closest city, so we probably are the city that ought to be speaking out, although I know Mayor Jimenez has as well. So, Commissioner Gongora. Okay, it's been moved, but okay. Commissioner Gongora.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm glad that this is on the agenda and that this body is taking action. This story has been in the news a lot. I've been reached out to, as I'm sure my colleagues have, by a number of people concerned that they think it's us. They think that we are not taking appropriate safety action. So I think it's wonderful that we are beefing up what was previously done by our administration and dealing with it and formalizing it into a resolution. I just don't know maybe if the resolution goes far enough or could be even a bit stronger. We're asking the Coast Guard again to reevaluate the jetty and see if it needs additional safety measures, whether that be lighting, whether that be flags, whether that be markings. I don't know. I'm not a specialist. But I think we need to do more than just ask them to take another look. We need to tell them we want them to do something about this. And I think the language should be more definitive on that point, because the loss of lives is unacceptable. There's this recent boating accident. There's the former pitcher from the Marlins, Fernandez, that died 2.5 years ago approximately. So people are losing their lives, and it seems like such an easy fix, and people can't understand why we can't get this done. So I enthusiastically support this, but I think we should also beef it up a bit and just request that they do it rather than that they study it some more.
To the extent that's an amendment, I'll accept it and direct Ralph to appropriately demand an action that addresses this very specifically. So everybody knows it's the Water Analysis and Management System, WAMS, which is what the Coast Guard uses.
Channel markers are not sufficient.
Yeah, I mean, listen, this is, it's horrific. Honestly, it's horrific. Commissioner Aleman.
I'll second the motion. It's appalling to me that that there's inadequate data from their standpoint. And, you know, I wouldn't be able to look the families of the six lives that were lost in the eye and say, you know, that wasn't adequate for what are probably pretty simple measures of lighting and marking to improve the navigability of this jetty. So I will certainly second it and sincerely hope at this point that they respond.
Anyone else? All right, let's all those in favor. It's been moved and seconded.
Yes, sir.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Like, sign, nay. Show it approved unanimously. Okay.
Who does amend it?
Commissioner Malakoff, you're the vice. Will you go ahead and move us into the RDA meeting real quick?
Yes. I move to open the RDA meeting.
The City Commission meeting is now in recess. The RDA meeting will start. All members are present except for Commissioner Higgins.
Thank you.
R7A1 is an item approving a settlement with the Yacht Club at Portofino Condominium. Miami Beach Marina and the City of Miami Beach.
Commissioners, because we did not have, as you recall, we had an attorney-client session at our April 10th meeting. wherein we discussed a proposed settlement of the litigation regarding the yacht club. Because we didn't have an RDA meeting at that meeting, I'm bringing it to this meeting so that you can approve the resolution authorizing us to proceed with the actual settlement and enter into the settlement agreement. Thank you.
Moved.
Second.
Seconded. You need a roll call?
Just a voice vote.
All in favor, signify saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Thank you very much.
The item passes. The RDA meeting is now closed. We have a companion meeting that is R7A, so it's joint approved settlement with the Yacht Club at Portofino, Miami Beach Marina, and the RDA.
Same thing, city item.
Okay, is there a motion?
Yeah, can you check the title? The version that I have on the 1, 2, 3, 4, 6th line says manger instead of manager. Can you check that?
How Christmassy.
It was a holiday light discussion.
It's a typo. It says manger.
Thank you.
Second.
Okay, the resolution has been made and seconded. The all in favor?
Aye.
So approved as corrected. I believe we are done.
I think there's a short discussion item.
Do we have a discussion R9A?
That's right. You're right.
There's a discussion.
Today.
An update.
Yes, R9A is discuss an update on Indian Creek, requested by Commissioner Gongora.
Thank you. I think this is a carryover from the last commission meeting where we said that we wanted to have an update tonight because we wanted to show the community that we are aggressively looking into this matter and taking action. So thank you, Roy, for being here.
Madam Commissioner, Metcalf, Commissioner, for the record, Roy Coley, Director of Public Works. Since the last commission meeting when this was referred, there are a few highlights to share. At that meeting, the authorization that you provided us to make some improvements to the site have begun. The contractor will be on site next week, and they will make those improvements. They're scheduled to be finished by the end of June, which will be most of the things the neighborhood has been requesting of late. We also attended the Mid-Beach Neighborhood Association meeting. There was probably 20 staffers there. The mayor and his staff was there. We had staff from Commissioner Areola's office, staff from Commissioner Gongora's office, as well as our partners in CIP and police. We did attend the meeting. We made sure everyone there knew who our public information staff was. Our public information officer has been on that site since 2016. They're with us today. We have Heather and Lynn that I think you all know. They were there. Public Works recently hired a staff public information officer. We had her there. So we made sure that all of the folks in Mid-Beach knew who to contact. We had a presentation prepared for them, but their schedule was such that when they turned it over to questions, we didn't have the opportunity to give that presentation on the improvements. Most of their crowd spent the time talking about speeding and painted sidewalks and so forth, so the actual Indian Creek project didn't get a lot of visibility at that meeting other than they know who to reach out to, and we've provided them written answers to all of their questions. I think that highlights most of what's taken place since then. If you want more details of the project, we're happy to share them, whatever's important to you.
Thank you. I think that satisfies this body. I would just ask that you stay in good communication with the Mid-Beach Neighborhood Association on this item, and as well as if anything new transpires, if you would submit it to us via LTC so that we stay informed as well.
Yes, sir. Yes, Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Cooley.
And the Flamingo Drive folks. It's a project that has, you know, multiple stakeholders. So. Yep.
Understood.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
This meeting is now adjourned.